Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren and we are broadcasting from the west coast of Sweden. Nice to have you with us. Thank you for tuning in to the program. We are here on Sundays and Thursdays, but we are accessible 24/7 through our radio archive at redicecreations.com. There you'll also find news, forums, newsletter and a member section with the film and our entire radio archive. Our guest today is Steve Wilner. He is a video artist, I guess you could say, and I suspect that a few of you out there have stumbled across some of Steve's work before. I've had a few of his videos linked up on Red Ice and in our forum as well. And I first heard about Steve Wilner via Jake Kotze, who has been on this program a few times before, a good friend. And Steve is very talented and he covers a lot of interesting subjects in his videos. Everything from mythology to symbolism, alchemy, to the occult, spirituality and much, much more. So I'm looking forward to talking with Steve here today, find out a bit more about him, his videos, how he works in general, and some of the topics that he covers. I also want to mention here right away that you can find him over at his YouTube channel. Basically, you can type up youtube.com/soundlessdawn, and that will get you to his YouTube channel. But he also has a blog, and the address is labyrinthofthepsychonaut.blogspot.com, and we'll have those linked up from our website so people can find his websites very easily from there. So it's a pleasure to welcome Steve Wilner to the program. Hi, good to have you on the program. Thank you for coming on, Steve.
Well, thanks a lot for the introduction, Henrik. That was great.
Thank you. You know, I'd love to talk about your videos here today and explore some of the many topics that you address in your movies, how you work, even the music and so forth. But before we do anything else, I'd love to hear a little bit more about you know, you and your background. I mean, when did you start making these videos?
Well, this is kind of a recent thing that I started doing about 4 months ago. The base establishment was the 9/11 event for me, really. It was sort of my awakening point. I'd always really been into, you know, the occult and philosophy of the unexplained. But when that happened, it really, I sensed it was like a glitch in the overall composition of the universe. I really felt that there was something wrong, a glitch in the matrix, if you know, something of those terms. Basically, when that happened, I knew there was some kind of really grand scheme organization involved with the event itself, but I couldn't really put my finger on it. Sort of like when Neo saw the black cat pass by him, and he said, "Oh, this is a deja vu. I feel like something's not right here." And then the response from Trinity was basically, "This is when, you know, the elites change something. This is when they go into the matrix and they alter something that's just not correct." Hmm. And I knew that the 9/11 event had that symbolism within it, but it wasn't clear to me really until I saw Jake Kotze's videos over at the Brave New World Order that I really started to put some of these pieces together and realized that it wasn't all about, you know, occultic themes. It really had to do with tying together, you know, collective consciousness and the symbol system that exists, a very ancient symbol system that sort of provides, you know, life throughout the cosmos. And it has to do with piecing those together via the collective consciousness and also pop culture, media, whether it be music, you know, multiple types of movies, music videos even, any form of media. It's like an expression of, or an inspiration or a muse for human beings to create these things. And they all have a kind of symbol system that begins to really appear to have an intelligently guided hand. And like I said, the 9/11 event was the trigger point for me to really leap into this full head.
Like so many of us, it seems 9/11 seems to be kind of a big point in that sense. It's almost like it's the spawning for so many people to going into these kind of subjects, and it makes you wonder if there was some kind of planned event behind it all. I meaning that this was more not a fluke accident by, you know, terrorists from from Middle East basically, but this was something much more than this, much more planned. You wonder what the heck the idea is, because it seems to be counteractive to what they are trying to achieve with it, right?
I think that's really what it was for me. It was sort of like the world of fiction or the world of dreams kind of coinciding with reality in a way that just didn't really add up at all. And I watched Jake's video, the Higher Intelligence and the Saturn Hexagon, and that just – actually, I was turned on to his videos by a friend of mine, Tyler, and they were really kind of taking it as a joke. They, you know, and they were watching Jake's videos and sort of laughing about it. And they knew I was into conspiracy theory and you know, a lot of these things that I was very interested in. So they led me onto his site, and I watched it, and I realized the genius behind it. You know, I realized that there were just so many elaborate patterns involved that just could not, you know, bear down to coincidence. You know, there is no spoon, there is no coincidence. I think the greatest thing, I mean, was the comparison to the Giza pyramids and how the 9/11 event was laid out almost like an electrical plug. You have the two towers as being the long prongs and the Building 7, the shorter prong. Mm-hmm. And then what really, you know, took it over the top for me was sort of the 2001 Space Odyssey, human enlightenment and the magic mushroom symbolism involved. Because the Millennium Hilton building that stands, you know, completely flush and adjacent with the Ground Zero event was designed purposely to be like the 2001 black monolith. And I just found that so mind-blowing that could be a coincidence, that that whole event was a reawakening of a Stargate, or someone was telling us that this was either our or their way of launching human beings into the next stage of human evolution. Indeed. And at least symbolically, it's tangible. And these are not things that we are making up or dreaming about. This is all tangible. These things are laid out purposely to represent these symbols and to represent the Stargate, and that's what the pyramids were intended for as well. So it just really boggles the mind.
Indeed, it does, exactly. And again, 2001, going back to Stanley Kubrick's, you know, masterpiece, the movie, and you know, it feels like it is about a birth of a new consciousness almost. And if you think about when the true millennium actually begin, you know, going over from 2000 over to 2001. That is basically, you know, if you you know, the gestation period 9 months after, you know, into the new millennium. Some very interesting things start to occur when you think about this event. So I agree with you. This seems to be some, you know, higher form of either communication or signal to, I don't know, a birth of a new consciousness. Would you agree on that?
Yes, I would, but whose birth into what, you know, into what consciousness? Who are these alleged masters making these decisions for us? And why do we have to endure almost, you know, tragedies to evolve? Isn't it within all of us to not need such a grand shove in that direction in order to achieve a higher state of consciousness? It almost seems like a cruel division on a way of evolving your consciousness. If you can do it by taking psychedelic drugs or meditation, or simply meditating, you know, and connecting with your fellow human beings, it's not necessary for us to, you know, murder thousands of people in the process, which is why it's so staggering to me, you know.
Yeah, it is.
And there's a lot of also interesting things about 2001. It seems never ending with that movie in particular, and the whole Stanley Kubrick thing. The number 666 comes up several times in the film. I think the monoliths in the movie appear for 666 seconds. The time before the first appearance and the final disappearance of each of the four monoliths. And the four together, it adds up to 666. And, of course, Stanley Kubrick was murdered or died, apparently, 666 days before the year 2001. So all those things are just – they're coincidences, yes. And you do find patterns in any system if you look hard enough. But the idea is if these patterns have meaning, if they have purpose, if you can derive things from them. And apparently you can in these situations – they seem to add up to a larger grand scale event, and it just really blows me away sometimes how far the rabbit hole goes, so to speak.
Definitely, I totally agree. You know, I want to talk a little bit more about your background here. I think you added your first video back in June this year, is that right?
Yeah. Like I said, I'd only been doing this for about 3 or 4 months. Basically, when I saw Jake's videos, I figured out a way to incorporate synchromysticism, which was very new to me at the time, with hollow earth research, which I'd been doing for quite some time. I was fascinated with that well before I got into making these videos. I'm a big fan of Bruce Agnew from – I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's trying to put together the first ever hollow earth research vehicle. He's going to take pedestrians on a ship to the North Pole
region. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of him. Yeah, sure.
So basically, I sent him my resume, and I got in contact with him. I applied for a position on the boat that they're going on. It's not a boat, it's a nuclear icebreaker ship, quite a powerful ship. I don't know, it just seemed like intuitively for me, the creation or Eden, it sort of wells up images of being located at the center of all things, like, you know, the center of the earth, the center of time, the center of the universe, the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop, you know. It seems like everything has that kind of motif about it, the sperm and the egg, the child and the womb. Even Pythagoras, I mean, his story with the apple seeds that I think you were talking about on a recent show.
Oh, yeah.
How they're in the pentagram formation at the core of the apple. That's just fascinating that, you know, there's other foundations such as the Meru Foundation who basically study the tertiary composition of the Torah, and that all the words and meanings themselves are very much like the apple, as basically the base of their context holds the key to creating a new meaning or breathing new life into the symbol systems.
Mm-hmm.
Much like, you know, the seeds of an apple hold the ingredients to replicate itself. So you have the birthplace of all things at the center of the apple that could basically replicate an apple tree and bear more fruit, and it's just a never-ending loop or cycle. You know, so would it be such a far stretch to the imagination for the earth to be teeming with life at its core, you know? Wouldn't this correlate to, you know, illuminate certain Atlantean myths or Atlantean themes, the bull's eyes or the Stargate motifs that you see, you know, aesthetically in all forms of conveyance?
Mm.
Even the symbol for the UN, it has 33 divisions on it that sort of look like they're dividing underground chambers of the earth into sections, you know.
That's right.
It's very peculiar that there's so many symbols like this. And I was coming when I viewed Jake's work, and I realized that you could see these things in movies and cartoons. And I was remembering that in my childhood, I used to watch Tiny Toon Adventures. And at the beginning of the cartoon show, there would always be this white rabbit that popped up right in the middle of this kind of Atlantean bullseye. And I was like, well, there's the white rabbit. There's the rabbit hole. And then, mm-hmm. you know, these are all symbols of sort of the eccentric circles of the Stargate symbolism, and also possibly Hollow Earth, and also possibly, you know, Atlantean themes and the checkerboard and the Masonic symbolism that we'll go into later, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also explains Hitler's fascination for exploring Antarctica, identifying with the black sun, which would be, if it did exist, it would be a much lower radiation version of the sun that we have in our solar system. But it would also provide for, you know, much longer lifespans and sort of giganticism. If people or beings actually did reside there, that would sort of maybe even be a background for the Methuselah story that I think you talked about in your longevity, which was great, by the way. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh, yeah, exactly. Definitely going back again to the biblical stories of, you know, even giants or, as you say, living longer, you know. That was interesting. You mentioned about going on that that trip. How are things going with that, by the way? And have you, I mean, how did you, you said that you applied or just sent in your resume. What's happening there?
Yes. Basically, Bruce put something on his website that he already has established scientists and sort of UFO researchers and, you know, professional video technicians that are already going on the trip with him. But there are room for certain individuals that he says to raise the consciousness of the ship so as to, if there were beings in Hollow Earth or there are UFOs at the polar regions, it could aid in basically raising the consciousness of the ship to sort of make first contact with these beings. So he basically put on his site to send him a resume, a letter of, you know, why you think that you would aid in this consciousness elevation on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Also to send a video of, you know, a personal interview video with you, you know, talking about why you think you qualify for the position.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, he's a little bit he doesn't always answer back emails. I think he's a very busy guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that he's still planning the trip. He had Steve Fawcett, who was originally going to hold the first expedition, tragically died. So Bruce has been chosen to basically take over his position. And I think when it gets a little bit closer to the end of the year, I'm going to try to, you know, write him a detailed letter and find out what's going on with the trip. I think basically it boils down to funding. He's trying to get finances for the nuclear ship they need to use to get to that region.
Mm.
And also what's interesting is for the first time, the solar warming, and I don't want to say global warming because I think that's BS, but
sure.
The solar warming that's going on right now is providing for the first availability to travel to some of these regions because the ice is breaking up. And actually the fabled Northwest Passage across Canada is actually now being navigated for the first time. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that's interesting. Definitely. But okay, so but there is no, at this point, as you know, there's no timeline on this. I think they're going to hire if I remember correctly, a Russian ship, I think.
Yes, that's correct. I'm really not sure of all the details. I don't know him personally. I just have met him through emails and things like that. But
sure.
As soon as I know, I'm going to let everybody at my blog know, and you as well. So I'm just trying to figure out the pieces of the puzzle like you guys.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting. Nice initiative. Hopefully it will be an event that do take place. And who knows? I mean, it seems very difficult at this point, at least, to be able to locate yourself up there. I mean, the question is how far in you can go with the boat, and what happens after that. You know, if you have to.
Yeah, walk. I mean, they're trying to triangulate from previous expeditions in the region, where there's basically a bunch of pictures from people who explored the region that Bruce wants to go to, where it looked like there was mountain ranges in the background, and they kind of stopped their journey because they couldn't really, they didn't think they could hike that kind of mountainous terrain. It looked pretty treacherous to them. And they looked on the satellite system, and lo and behold, there's no mountains there. So, it brings a lot of interesting questions up, like if the area is guarded by some kind of hologram, or if there's some kind of preventative measures being taken for people to explore those regions. You have we have satellite pictures of Mars and, of the planets of the solar system, very detailed. And of Earth, of course, you have Google Earth. You can see everywhere basically on the grid. And there are no really detailed pictures of the poles of our planet available to the public. And I find that to be very, very bizarre, a little bit too bizarre for my liking. I don't really understand why something so simple as a map of the globe would be withheld from civilians,
That's right. But I do know that they even they do cancel out what they call sensitive areas. I mean, even sometimes when they're taking aerial photos of for postcards and stuff like that, the military actually goes in and removes some of the stuff,
Oh sure, there's all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, you got Mel's Hole in Washington. That was supposedly an entranceway to Hollow Earth. I mean, there's a few that are a little ridiculous. I think the pyramids were mentioned as one, and Solomon's Mines. Even Mammoth Cave in Kentucky, but they you're right. They do block these out for these images on Google Earth. It makes you wonder what they're trying to hide. Obviously, civilians are going to be blocked by from certain information that's just completely classified. But sure. I just wonder why they block it out at all.
Exactly. I want to go back again and talk a little bit about your video production. Have you doing anything like that before previously? Have you studied anything like that? What got you into it, so to speak?
No, interestingly enough, I've always been a musician all my life, just focused on the arts, and have been, really a fan and had a love for movies, but I never did any video editing. I really have to say the program I used to do the editing, Sony Vegas 7.0, it's extremely intuitive. And, if you look at my Hollow Earth video, it's very, very primitive. It's just a bunch of single pictures and me narrating. That even the microphone quality I was using back then was not very good, and I just sort of built on my knowledge of the system, and I upgraded my studio a little bit over time, and now I incorporate really full moving videos and sort of fractal artwork and all kinds of things incorporated into it now, with multiple musical lines edited in, as well as my voiceovers. So I just basically have added layers of complexity as I've gone forward, and I plan on continuing that trend as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The work does evolve. You can definitely see that, definitely. You mentioned 9/11, of course, as a kind of a spawning point, or a point where things began. How long after the event itself did you actually begin to reading more about it, or become more interested in that subject?
Well, not to sound pompous, but honestly, as soon as I saw the towers drop, it's that moment when I saw it on TV, it was basically like a shattering of my reality. I wasn't really open with it to my friends or people I was close to at the time, but as things developed and more people started coming forward, I started gaining confidence as to further my research in the field. And all of us in this field of research, like Jake and Todd Campbell from Through the Looking Glass, Hoi Polloi from Sabrina's Journey, Keen from A Keen's Eye, even A Ferris Moon, we're really telling the most exciting story ever told, in my opinion. When you're born, you're given this finality or brick wall of gnosis. Turn to religion for all your questions concerning the mysteries in God. Never venture down the rabbit hole. Never look towards the great beyond ever. But in this narrative that, you know, people in synchro circles delve into, which is very much real in all of our hearts, you know, we really get to see the universe in action. We recognize elaborate patterns in space-time that make the entire creation seem like, you know, one big intelligently guided hologram. And when I say intelligently guided, I'm not suggesting like a singularity or, you know, grumpy old, you know, lawmaking god of ultimatums that Christians want you to believe in. I'm talking about like a conglomerate of intelligently evolved consciousness that humans are indeed a part of. And, you know, that makes God or the universe conscious of itself. So, you know, in a way, I really feel like we're all a part of this Godhead, and we're very much creational beings. You know, we grow plants, we raise children, we, you know, once we realize our potential, that we've only just begun to evolve, we've only sort of embarked on this transformation, this 2001 black monolith evolution, the walls of the matrix start to disintegrate, and, you know, we start to actualize and know true freedom. And synchro mysticism is just a recognition of the symbol system that's starting to become more and more apparent and more obvious, you know, through our collective consciousness and our experience. And it's kind of a way of just noticing the universe actually has an intelligence, and that we give it that intelligence, because we, you know, it, you could almost say that there is two creations. There is one for inanimate objects and one for people or consciousness, conscious beings to observe the inanimate. And we are part of that latter creation, and it's just so wonderful. It just, it's never ending. It's a fractal loop that will just go on into eternity, and I'm just I'm pretty much just cherishing every moment of it, really.
Great. Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Yeah, you can see that in a lot of your videos and, you know, the language you use also. And talking about your videos, your latest one is called Opiuchus, the Burning Tower and the Doppelganger Universe. And you talked about a pretty interesting idea about the time loop scenario, I guess we could say, that things are, you know, happening over and over and over again, like the rise and fall of, you know, civilization or even the rise and fall of man. And you explore the idea of, you know, catastrophe a little bit, and you mentioned nuclear holocaust or human utopia being the choice. Tell us about that idea a little bit. I find that interesting.
Sure. Basically, the Burning Tower was a Nostradamus prophecy. It's not, you know, his alone. It's a very ancient prophecy. It's happened numerous times over history. You know, the Tower of Babel being one that comes to mind and one of the more popular ones. And that was basically when the gods, or, you know, ETs or extraterrestrials or whoever you want to define as gods at the time, saw human beings were banding together, and they were trying to build a tower to compete with the gods or to, you know, become more evolved and to become more intelligent. And what did they do in this story? They confused everybody's language. They set them, you know, scattering in their ways into the forest and basically confused everybody. And the Burning Tower is a motif that goes on throughout history. You see it everywhere. I mean, you see, even in the South Park episode that was just out concerning Imagination Land, or I don't know if you watched that show.
Oh, yeah, but someone sent me that link. Yeah, I actually watched it. Yeah.
The symbolism is incredible in that episode. And, you know, the makers of South Park aren't a part of this grand conspiracy. It just so happens that they're, you know, tapped into this sort of collective pop culture consciousness, because that's what they do for their job. They basically read people's, you know, pop culture intentions. And there are things in that episode, like there was a bee, there was Anubis, you know, pushing the snarf from the Thundercats down a slide. And the Thundercats are representative of the Israelites and the Exodus movement. And there was also a part in that episode of where they showed the Burning Tower. And this, you know, obviously ties back to 9/11. And it seems like every time that there is an incident with the tower coming down, it's sort of like the beginning point in which the culture has a choice either to destroy itself via, you know, nuclear destruction or to create a utopia. And I say that because the Atlanteans, or civilizations that came before us in ancient Babylon, obviously aren't here anymore. They may have had the similar choice. And when I put Ophiuchus into the category, they were going through the same galactic alignment that we are about to go through right now in 2012. So they had an equally interesting choice that we are trying to make for ourselves right now. And obviously they may have chose for the nuclear annihilation. Well, not chose for it, but that may have gone down in their civilization.
Exactly. Yeah, there seems to be evidence for it. We had Joseph Farrell on a few weeks ago. We talked about, actually previous civilizations, or even the ones that, you know, we still can recall and bring up some form of remnants from, speaking of, you know, civilizations from Mesopotamia and Sumeria and all that, speaking about war in the heavens.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but when I was researching it, they had a lot of sites came up with sort of meteorite explosion impacts around Scandinavia, around your region, actually.
Yeah.
And the northeastern coastline of the United States. And I was thinking, you know, meteorite explosions and these kind of half-lives or radioactive elements that they're finding in the Earth, you know, could it have been such a stretch for there to be an actual war between, you know, an ancient civilization in our past? And I think that it is very feasible that it happened before. And I, you know, I wonder if they maybe had the internet or they had movies and they sort of had this kind of choice to make in their portion of the time loop that we have to make right now. And as time goes on and there's more civilizations that fail through this kind of repeating loop, the Akashic records or whatever you want to call them sort of build up and the civilizations of future times get to use those Akashic records to try to avoid the catastrophe. They have more of a more vast library of, you know, psychokinetic books to read, if you want to put it that way.
Interesting. And the question is if you know, if there actually is something external going on or something external happening, meaning that someone actually is intervening in the process, and when humanity reaches a certain level, I've heard researchers refer to it like this, that the experiment, in quotes, actually started over or, you know, restarted, basically.
And that's what's so interesting. Exactly. I don't want to keep re-quoting The Matrix, but that's basically what the theme was in the second one in the series. The architect told Neo basically that this is the sixth revision of The Matrix and that they destroyed it, you know, several times before.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like it's the ultimate metaphor. That movie really is genius for its metaphor because now we see, you know, fiction blurring with reality with events like 9/11 and, you know, all of these things coming together. It's just really, again, mind blowing.
Absolutely. Definitely. You mentioned The Matrix, of course, a big movie in that sense that seemed to also have actually awakened a lot of people, at least got them to think in a new way. Let's talk a little bit about film. You quite prominently featured, you know, in your videos, you have a lot of film footage from different films. Mention a few of your favorites. You mentioned Matrix, of course, and 2001, but are there anyone up there on your list more?
I like all of Terry Gilliam's stuff. I love Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Baron Munchausen. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is one of my favorites as well. I'm really easy to please, actually. I like all movies, sci-fi movies. A lot of the stuff I do for my videos are mainly because they have to do with the point I'm trying to make. I like horror movies as well that have to do with sort of these Stargate themes like Event Horizon. And actually, have you seen the movie Sunshine? I spoke about it in one of my videos. It's quite interesting, the symbolism in that one.
Definitely, yeah.
Basically, when I was doing my Project Lucifer research, and, you know, I'm by no means a physicist, so I started asking around to see if this was even theoretically possible. A lot of people were commenting to me on my site, you know, if this was feasible to make a fusion reaction with the Cassini satellite, which is housing all the plutonium. You know, basically, there's a lot of unknown variables involved with that story. With 72 pounds of plutonium, it's the equivalent of a 600 kiloton explosion. In comparison, it's Nagasaki, I think, was 7 kilograms, which is, you know, basically, if the Saturn explosion, if the Cassini satellite is in fact housing that amount of plutonium, would create temperatures at around 100 million degrees Kelvin because of the high density of the point of detonation. Mm-hmm. And also, Saturn is experiencing some changes in its atmosphere. I think it has increased 30% of its surface pressure in the last few years, and that's just completely amazing because if that happened on Earth, we'd be all history. I don't even think the sun's interior is not even that hot. It's only 30 million degrees Kelvin.
So
it's more than above the threshold for a fusion reaction to start. Saturn's a similar in content to the sun. The same ingredients can produce the result, the ignition of basically the entire body of dense hydrogen.
My particular
angle on the phenomenon, Henrik, via synchromysticism, is to pick out patterns in the collective consciousness and pop culture as to why these topics are being talked about at all. You know, the science behind it's not even what is so amazing to me. It's actually that we're talking about it right now. So when the movie Sunshine came out, I was just completely, you know, my eyes just dropped. I could not believe what I was watching because basically the plot line revolves around a team of scientists they're taking an enormous cuboid atom bomb with hexagon engines to rekindle the dying sun. And of course, you know, the hexagon imagery and the Saturn hexagon are predominant in pop culture right now.
Yeah.
They actually make reference to the cube being the size of Manhattan Island. So that pulls it back to the 9/11 event, you know, the cosmic cube symbolism surrounding the whole 9/11 event. So it's just bizarre that, just some director would throw that in there without having any conscious motive behind it.
Mm.
And it becomes very interesting. There's also a character in that particular film named Cassie. As you know, the satellite housing the second sun fueling plutonium bomb is called the Cassini satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where the main character actually promises Cassie that he's going to fly her to the surface of the sun. So the symbolism is just incredible. They're flying this huge cubic, you know, atom bomb into the heart of the sun. The main character is telling Cassie he's going to fly her to the surface of the sun. So it's just incredible that would be in there. there's another film in the works concerning the Cassini mission right now called Quantum Quest.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Quantum Quest, a Cassini Space Odyssey. And what's really curious about that film is that the cast involved is quite bizarre. You have John Travolta, who's a known Scientology guru.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't get me started on that one. That's probably it's a pretty long stretch. You have Sarah Michelle Gellar, who's going to play Alice in Wonderland in upcoming American McGee Alice. It's a video game I featured in my Halloween special video.
Mm-hmm.
She also resonates to White Rabbit because she was in a Stone Temple Pilots video called Sour Girl. And, you know, that had a lot of Wonderland-like aesthetics to it. You have our Snakes on a Plane frontman Samuel Jackson, which is, you know, this serpent caduceus wrapped around the plane. He's also going to be in this Cassini kind of cartoon movie. And James Earl Jones, who represents the Lionsgate and Serpent, as he was the snake god and leader of the Temple of Set in Conan the Barbarian. You know, so some interesting characters, to say the least, are going to enlighten us about Saturn on the silver screen, wouldn't you agree?
Mm, definitely. When is do you know when this is due for coming out?
This is 2008, sometime. It's still in production, I believe. It's 2008 sometime.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So keep an eye on the new movies. There are lots coming out around 2008, 2009. I think they're doing one called I, Lucifer, something like that. And there's, you know, so many more. I'm trying to just keep, I mean, it's a full-time job, you know, just keeping
this
up.
This is what
with,
I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This is going to be never-ending because movies are just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to synchromysticism.
That's right.
I actually have I have some jotted down that are coming out in 2010 that have some interesting names. I can read those for you. They're kind of bizarre.
Sure.
Let's see here. Area 52, The Ark, 2012, The War of Souls. I'm not making this up, I promise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bond 23, Enter the Phoenix, Guardians of Space and Time, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, which, you know, is laced with this kind of symbolism.
Sure, sure.
New Awakenings, Noah's Ark, another movie about Oz, something called The Passage, and actually a Thundercats movie is coming out. So exactly. I'll never run out of ideas. And even if 10 more people besides Jake and I started making videos on these subjects, we'd never run out of material. It's just incredible, the symbolism that's going on right now. And it all has to coincide with the ascension process that human beings are going through right now.
Mm.
We're being very affected by sort of this galactic summer we're moving into. As we move into the Ophiuchus and we move into this kind of galactic alignment of 2012, people are going to start really, you know, having a reawakening, and all this stuff is going to get more and more bizarre and amazing until it comes to the melting point where everybody just has to realize that there's more truth to these phenomena than leads to the eye at first.
Absolutely, yeah, I definitely hope so, and we can see it already, and it's about time. Let me say that, you know.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Why is it taking us so long? You know. Thousands and thousands of years, Henrik.
Mm.
And what do we have to offer our population? You know, go to a football game, you know.
Yeah.
70,000 people packed into a stadium where they drink beer and watch people, you know, attack each other, like in the Colosseum.
Mm.
Is that really what our true potential is? I mean, you would think with 70,000 people in a stadium, there'd be some kind of Socrates-like character at the center telling everybody the secrets of the earth, you know?
Yeah.
And instead we have people throwing around a pigskin and trying to kill each other. It's just absurd.
It is absurd.
And I listened to your interview with Jay Widener, who I really admire and respect a lot. I think the movies that he's trying to produce are going to be groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was talking about the Archons, and he was talking about how they sort of absorb in a wraith-like fashion. They absorb people's energy, and that goes back to The Dark Crystal. Are you familiar with that film, the Jim Henson movie Dark Crystal?
No, I haven't seen that one. No.
It's really interesting. You should watch it just for the synchronicism inside the film.
Mm-hmm.
There's basically a faction of sort of vulture-like reptilian beasts called the Skeksis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they drain the life force of all the beings in the region through these crystals. And they sort of take the life force that they drain from these creatures, and then they drink it to give themselves longer-lasting lives or immortality.
Oops.
And that's sort of like the theme with what I was saying about the sporting events. You know, it's almost like a draining of energy of the human species to make them forget the sovereignty in their blood, the sort of star power in their DNA. So to dumb them down to sort of docile sheep. And they're actually making a sequel to The Dark Crystal, another movie that's coming out that looks really interesting, where it's about the duality of mankind. And there's actually the plot line has to do with rekindling a dying sun at the center of the planet. So then you go back to Hollow Earth theory once again. It's a never-ending cycle that always comes back. It's like the dragon eating its tail, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Very, very interesting indeed. You know, and it seems to be, again, this convergence of so many different, you know, wills, basically, of where humanity is going to go and where we're going to end up, basically. It seems to be, just as you mentioned now, there's so much more coming out. The you know, there's so much more going into the consciousness of so many people. And at the other side of that coin, it also seems to be a kind of a rush towards actually preventing humanity from reaching that point. And what I'm mainly thinking about when I mention that, of course, is you know, everything from microchipping to actually, you know, to some levels dumbing down people, putting crap in the food, and there's so many different we're attacked on every front, basically. And what I see is that there is this very strong duality that's probably going to get even stronger and stronger in the years ahead here, towards where we're going to end up and what, you know, what path we're going to go down. Do you ever see that, you know, it's do you ever see it that way, that it's we're in a messy situation in that sense, but we're in a, you know, we're potentially in a lot of trouble and we can could end up on the wrong path? What's your ideas about that?
Of course. I mean, that's just a repetitive theme that we've been, you know, up against, that, you know, goes back to the Archons and things like that. And you wonder if these, you know, Illuminati officials or these people that do all these, you know, sort of the Georgia Guidestones, how they want to, you know, dumb us down and basically get us down to 500 million on the planet to have a more sustainable environment. But I mean, their means of doing it is by just massacring people. This is so bizarre. I mean, granted, they're taking sort of the yin yang ulterior motive of human consciousness. The, you know, the negative energies are sort of needed because there can't be light without darkness. But that's why I don't really look at them as a threat. They're sort of a part of the natural order of things. You know, one system built on another.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a challenge, and I think that as human beings evolve, you know, like I said in my time loop video, if we don't do it this time, then we'll have another opportunity to try to overcome these sort of negative parasites that are living amongst us right now. And, you know, it really makes me confused as to how human beings could have sort of this materialistic sense and want to annihilate their fellow man instead of enlighten them. It makes it almost inhuman to me. Like, there's outside ETs or outside you know, transdimensional entities that are actually using these people as parasites to do evil in the world. It really doesn't make a whole lot of sense when I take those kind of extraordinary circumstances out of the equation. When I think that it's just humans doing this to humans and they're preventing us from, you know, going on with our evolution, it really does not make a whole lot of sense. And when I think, you know, God created us in his image, I don't think in biblical terms. I think of a system built upon another system. At a very micro level, you have, you know, quarks and atoms and electrons, and then you have organelles and amoebas, singular cellular organisms, and then human beings, and then you have planets, and then you have stars and solar systems and galaxies and clusters of galaxies, and it seems to go from the micro to the macro, and we really never see the end of it. So it just makes me kind of enraged that we want to stop at this little tiny blue dot and not go on and not proceed. And that there's a force to overcome. But I think that when that force is overcome, that those kind of parasitic entities don't come with it, if you catch my drift.
Sure.
I believe in reincarnation, and I believe that once human beings kind of reach that level of ascension, if you want to call it a leap to fourth density or, you know, sort of the cocoon to the butterfly that we're all going through right now, the people that are not ready to do this and the people that are kind of possessed by these archons or possessed by these dark entities are not going to come with us. They are simply going to incarnate into another third dimensional realm, sort of like Earth, and act as the catalyst or preventative measure from making the other people evolve. It's sort of like a big test, honestly. It's a test for us to try to evolve past these parasites. And once we do, and you know, I'm not condemning those people either. I think that they, through their incarnations, they eventually get to go where everybody goes, because evolution only goes one way. It goes, you know, into the from the micro to the macro. So when these people eventually find the error of their ways, and there's every generation of humans that are aligned to this sort of, you know, black sun or this dark entity, they each time have access to the same expansion of the Akashic records as we do. So perhaps they find the error of their ways over time, over the time loop. The more times it repeats, the more people get to advance to the next stage of evolution. And, you know, when I was talking about human beings being creator beings, I was serious about that. You know, granted, we do it on a very small scale here because, honestly, we're just very intelligent apes at this point. But imagine millions of years from now, you know, could we could craft universes, we could craft star systems, we would be, I mean, I'm not trying to have a god complex, but we would be ultimately gods, we'd be creator beings.
I mean, we could just potentially look at what could happen in the years to come if we actually take technology into the picture. I mean, they can do some really weird stuff, you know, what would look like magic to us, you know, at this point still, but I mean, nanotechnology, we have all kinds of, you know, quantum computing, and who knows how the heck and where the heck this might go, and what will happen from that, if a technological singularity is achieved, or a kind of a singularity that has to do with the, with enlightenment and creation and, you know, basically inspiration, then we have no idea at you know, today at what that might look tomorrow, you know.
Well, that's a very good point, Henrik, and you see, it makes very good sense to me why extraterrestrials or other intelligent life don't just fly down here and rescue us. I mean, or, you know, tell us the error of our ways. This seems sort of like a gauntlet or an activity we have to put ourselves through to strengthen our spirituality to get to the point where we can be citizens of the universe. That's why sort of UFOs and the whole alien phenomenon, there's a loophole where you can just jump right out of it and not believe it and not think it's tangible. There's always a series of events that lets you kind of take the conservative route and think, okay, well, this is just some kind of, you know, collective hallucination or fable that everybody's making up because they need to believe in some kind of higher entity or higher power. And then you have all the stories from ancient Babylon up until now about, you know, ancient religions and the symbolism of UFOs and extraterrestrials and texts, and even in the Bible, it's just saturated with, like, you know, rotating discs and, you know, lights from the sky and ascensions and dissensions. These can all be, you know, misconstrued. You know, they don't have to be literal angels or come from other dimensions. Or if they do come from other dimensions, it may just in fact be a consciousness that originally started like ours did. And they just simply did not kill themselves off, did not take the Atlantean route of, you know, having a nuclear holocaust, and they actually just became citizens of the universe, and over millions and millions of years started becoming creator beings as a conglomerate, as a godhead, as communities of millions of people that have, you know, been evolving for millions and millions of years to form a sort of galactic community that has laws, that has order. You know, they can't just fly down here and tell human beings all the secrets of their civilization, because it takes millions of years for us to work up to that point.
Well, exactly. I mean, how would it look, and what would we even have learned as a species if someone else comes down at this point and say, oh, we know you're in a lot of trouble, but we're going to save you from all of that now, so you don't have to do anything, you know? Just sit back, relax, we'll do it for you.
Precisely. And you know what? Inside a human body, the complexity of your brain and your nervous system and the circulatory system and all the cells in your body, that is a universe. You know, we have the potential to do things that are just being limited right now. If we put our mind to it, we wouldn't need any external help, you know. If anything, it might even hinder the process. We need to do this ourselves. That's the main point.
Exactly. And going back to the idea that you talked about with, I guess, in regards to tragedy or why bad things happen, as it were, but I see it as a kind of a powerful force in the way of actually getting man off his butt, so to speak. I think Michael Tesserion said something that, you know, the Greek knew that, you know, tragedy is a vital part of human development. Otherwise, basically, man would sit on his ass all day and do nothing, you know?
Of course, and Michael Tesserion is really brilliant. All the things he talks about as cities being built as ritual centers, and how there's zodiacs inscribed in certain cities, all in a magical pretext or context. And that's where synchromysticism kind of blurs the lines into his research, because, you know, cities like Phoenix, you know, and cities like Washington, D.C. that have all of this kind of Egyptian symbolism and you know, zodiac symbolism, and even, you know, Manhattan Island, as it represents sort of the mound of the Masonic tracing board,
mm-hmm.
and the three pillars in the temple of, you know, the pyramids of Giza. These sites are actually more vulnerable to sort of these mass scale rituals. And I consider 9/11 to be, you know, the most massive magical ritual ever undertaken and successfully, you know, for what its purposes were, to successfully have rendered it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, once if tomorrow there was a nuclear attack on Phoenix or there's a nuclear attack on Washington, D.C., it wouldn't be so odd to me, because these places are designed to absorb energy and to absorb sort of a negative or sort of be the bullseye for activity like those things. And you it just boils down to the symbolism behind the event, like the Phoenix rising from the ashes. These people that are orchestrating these events, you know, hold very dear to these things, and they draw upon their power. And again, it's a very mysterious sensation that you get from a very dark, you know, again, being attached by parasites. But I started originally being, you know, rather paranoid about the sort of Illuminati and the eye at the top of the capstone. And I started being a little concerned and anxious about it when I first started getting into this. But I realized, well, I didn't realize, I view the eye now, or the eye of illumination, as my eye. And I don't really view them as a threat, because, as I said before, they're sort of the black and white checkerboard. They're sort of the antithesis or the challenge that we're pitting ourselves against. So
sure.
I feel as illuminated as they are, and I don't view those things as negative anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's, for me at least, it's more about observing the development of all of this than to sit around and, you know, be frightened by it or anything like that. That doesn't, again, that doesn't mean that, you know, people, and I mean, people are killed, people are taken out, I mean, there are wars going on, and people die in millions, you know, it's a horrendous, but again, I think that once you get over there, that initial emotional response, you have to take it to a kind of philosophical level and see it in a spiritual way, otherwise you would go nuts, I think, in the end, you know.
Oh, of course, of course. And this is more about, you know, the collective consciousness than being opposed by any kind of threat like that. Although it does seem to tangibly exist, it's sort of like you have to overcome it by putting it out of your mind and sort of realizing that you are your own Stargate within yourself, and you don't need any kind of, you know, outside advice or help to get you to that point of evolution. And as we sort of proceed to this level of ascension that the Mayans predicted and other civilizations have predicted, you're going to see more people sort of awakening. And you know, anything that unplugs people, people ask me if I think 9/11 was a positive event. I definitely don't, but I do appreciate how people are reacting to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, shows like Red Eyes and everything that we're doing in the synchro circles and my videos, if they aid to even unplug a handful of people, I think that's the most noble thing we could do with this sort of cause at this point in time. As things progress, maybe there'll be more opportunities to sort of infiltrate people's, you know, hierarchy of you know, belief systems, and not sort of impose on them and break down all of their boundaries before they're ready, if you get what I'm saying there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, again, it goes back to the idea of what they actually talk about in the Matrix, that I think they mentioned that after a certain age, it becomes, you know, potentially dangerous to unplug them from the Matrix, basically.
Yes, exactly. See, this is what I'm saying. I don't hate it, but that movie seriously has, you know, so much metaphor enlaced in it that has to do with our current awakening right now, that it's almost scary that movie exists. And I wonder if other civilizations in the previous time loop, you know, that were going through this kind of trial and tribulation had similar things that were awakening people.
Mm.
Obviously, maybe they didn't achieve their success rate that they're having now. But, I mean, was there a truth movement or any kind of sort of enlightenment after the Tower of Babel was destroyed? I seriously doubt it. So I think that we have, like, higher odds this time around.
Mm. That's interesting. you know, I want to talk a little bit more about the Lucifer project that you mentioned. I remember reading a few years ago that there actually was a different sonde that was crashed into Jupiter at that point.
Called the Galileo.
That's
satellite.
Right.
Yes, that happened.
That's right.
NASA tried to say that it was from or due to a meteorite impact at the equator of Jupiter. But as anyone that studies astronomy knows, that is an incredibly rare event. The Shoemaker-Levy comets didn't even, you know, strike in those zones because the gravity, central gravity, is so repellent there. But it seemed to have this gigantic kind of implosion mark, similar to the 2001, you know, symbolism. And that was directly after they admittedly launched the Galileo probe into Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they were intentionally trying to create sort of a second sun in that particular event. Maybe it was a precursor to it. But, I mean, I definitely don't think it is not within the power of these individuals. And, you know, NASA and sort of our science in general is so much further ahead than what we teach our students in our classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it wasn't a plutonium reaction to sort of fuel a second sun, I'm sure they have other back-engineered technologies that would allow them to do something similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
Will they actually go through with it, or is it actually more symbolic is another question, but... It's, again, the interesting part is that we're even discussing it right now, and that so many people are discussing it. That's just, you know, that's what really is curious about this whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the black monolith in 2001 was originally supposed to be a tetrahedron. You know, four triangular surfaces of the pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And the tetrahedron is a building block that reminds us of the Kaaba, the missing cornerstone of the Great Pyramid. You know, the so-called container of creation. In fact, you know, Kubrick actually had them construct the tetrahedron with a 12-foot tall plexiglass, and it was really difficult for them to do. He rejected it because it had like a green tint to it that didn't really appear well on film. And it was interesting because I was just reading an article on the building design for the Freedom Tower. You know, that design is very similar to a tetrahedron, and it's very similar. It's got an octagonal base. It's just, you know, the Stargate elements within the building of that, or the construction of that building, are just completely, you know, mind-blowing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And I was reading an article. They said that they were trying to remove the iron from the glass because the iron gives the glass a green hue. So you know, it's the same kind of rejection that sort of Kubrick had on the film. And it's just those little synchronicities that add up. I know, again, you could see patterns arising in any system. You know,
sure.
Sort of if you watch binary code long enough, you'll see patterns arise. And I'm sure even if our brains were five times bigger, you could start to derive a signature in pi. So anything, you know. From the micro to the macro level, if you look at it long enough, you know, patterns arise. It's when fiction or the dream world starts imitating or coming into reality is when the patterns become most interesting, at least to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And I agree with you in that, you know, philosophy or what seems to be more a developing science at this point. But what I'm talking about here is, of course, the holographic universe, that if everything, you know, contains a part of you know, the whole or the bigger, no matter what humans touch or what we do with our art or films or whatever, there's going to be some kind of reflection or mirroring going on, meaning that you can always actually look at a smaller scale model basically to get an idea of how it looks, you know, either above us or below that point.
Exactly. I mean, Carl Sagan was famous for quoting things very similar to that, and of course Richard Hoagland's hyperdimensional theory, which is that has been another true inspiration to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the William Blake quote, to see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. It's like hyperspace interacting with real time. It has nothing to do, the hexagon in Saturn has nothing to do with the moons that orbit it or the, you know, magnetic repulsion from the sun. It has to do with, you know, hyperspace interacting with real time.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with the matrix interacting with the hologram that we live in, this reality that we observe. And it's all around us. You go to a major city and you're just kind of bombarded by cubes and rectangles and triangles and pyramids and spheres. It's so evident that we live in three dimensions, that they're bearing down on us. It's sort of like a prison we need to escape from. And it's this three-dimensional realm is derived by hyperspace. It's pouring in from the fourth dimension. So whatever the fourth dimension is sort of the source or the center, or the womb, if you will,
mm-hmm.
the original Eve of the universe. And that's what gives it its holographic presentation. And that's why when films like The Matrix come out and sort of just, you know, tell millions of people right in their face that they're living in a hologram, it's almost too much to bear sometimes, that people don't just like completely change their way of life right there, you know?
That's right. But it takes a lot to... as you say, process that and understand that, and many people are actually not, you know, potentially ready. I believe that everyone can, you know, wake up as long as they have that driving force inside themselves somewhere, and eventually that voice will, you know, become louder and louder, and they will, you know, stumble upon the right information at the right time. Again, synchronicity. I bet so many people. Yep. Go ahead.
Oh, not to cut you off, but just anything that seems out of place to me or resembles a déjà vu, I mean, I consider direct correspondence from the universe. You know, like when 8 or 9 bridges collapsed this year around the world, I didn't see it as a random coincidence. I saw it as the same sort of metaphor for, you know, Black Cat passing Neo and him saying, oh, you know, something's been changed in the Matrix. What does that mean?
Yeah.
It means the elites are doing something to basically, you know, put the sheets over your eyes and just change the reality around you. And I know a lot of people think that train of thought is crazy or insane, but sometimes these coincidences, as if you really go far into the rabbit hole as sort of the synchro circle you know, people and myself go into, it becomes more obvious that these coincidences are indeed, you know, occurring. They're tangible to us, at least, and they seem to, more and more people seem to be catching on to it as more of a reality than a dream world. I hope that continues. I hope that it, you know, only has room to grow from here.
Absolutely, definitely. Hey, listen, we're actually fast approaching the end here of our first hour, but I do want to ask you, are you interested in continuing speaking with us a little bit longer?
Sure. Let's see where it goes. We can continue as well.
Definitely. Excellent. Before we end off here, though, for this first segment, I want to mention again your YouTube channel and your blog. First of all, youtube.com/ Soundless Dawn. That's the YouTube channel. And your blog, of course, is labyrinthofthepsychonaut.blogspot.com. What are your, you know, before we run things off in this first segment here, what are your plans for the future here? Continue as you do, or do you have bigger projects on the horizon?
Yeah, so, I mean, of course, I want to expand. I want to start making, you know, larger video segments. The only reason why Jake and I do this sort of 10-minute limit is because that's what YouTube allows at the moment. I want to start bringing this sort of topic, secret mysticism, to a wider audience using, you know, different mediums. I want to begin writing a book on the subject. I want to sort of experiment with film and documentary and just sort of compile these things into a DVD and eventually get it out to everybody so they have it in a much better quality. There's sort of things you could see in my videos on the higher quality AVI format that are just, you know, not evident in the YouTube video. So I want to make that available to people that are interested. So
yeah.
just double check my blog and I'll definitely, you know, have updates and post everything as far as news concerning this. You know, these topics in there. And we also have been trying to have sort of a documentary put together or do something with sort of a conference. Jake and I were contacted by this mysterious character on YouTube who wants to put together a conference where all of us in the Synchro Circles kind of get together and elaborate on our motives behind it, sort of like, you know, these interviews, except in person. So
interesting.
We finally get to meet everybody involved.
Yeah.
So that's in the plans.
Interesting. Yeah, I hope that... That turns out to be so. You were located in the U.S., right?
Yeah, I'm in Florida right now. Probably, I'm in South Florida right now. Probably a rather dangerous place, considering there's only two escape routes in this little peninsula. But I love where you guys are actually residing in Stockholm. Or where are you in Sweden exactly?
On the other side of the coast, near Gothenburg. That's the second largest city in Sweden. So.
Oh, Gothenburg. That's just beautiful out there. I would love to visit out there for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. Exactly. We'll see what happens, as they say. There are things, you know, things are happening in synchronicity, as it were, is with us all the time. So let's see where it goes, as it were.
Most agreed, Heinrich. It's only going further and further into the future.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah, Steve, we'll take a short little break here, but we'll continue talking a little bit more in the subscriber section. But again, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
We are going to continue our excellent conversation with Steve Wilner in the subscriber section on symbolism, mythology, films, music, and much, much more. So head on over to redicecreations.com for all the information on how you can get access to our member section and tune in. Thank you for listening and for all the kind email and the positive feedback we've been getting. My thanks also to Fredrik behind the controls. This is Henrik Palmgren and it's Red Ice Creations Radio. Until next time, take good care.